This is track 2 of Feast of Tabernacles 2008, day number 3. Let's continue now. I'm going to be reading on page 7, the first part of chapter 1, where he explains how he came to understand the 6 epics. And I think it's interesting. 6 is the number of man. And when we come to Revelation 13, we have the mark of the beast, the number, the his name and his number is 666, which is the perfection of man's political system, religious system, and economic system, which then is all tied together with what we're putting together here. And as we saw that chart, it was very interesting how that the main thrust coming down through the 6 epics looked like a serpent. I don't know if that was intended or not, whoever came up with it, but it is very interesting to see that in spite of themselves, people reveal about themselves things that they know not because they don't understand the Bible. So Kurtzville writes, I'll explain a little bit how he came to this, what he wrote. He said, I'm not sure when I first became aware of the singularity. I've had to say it was a progressive awakening, evolution. And the almost half century that I've immersed myself in computer and related technologies, I've sought to understand the meaning and purpose of the continual upheaval that I have witnessed at many levels, changing technologies. Gradually, I've become aware of a transforming, isn't that interesting? Pick up many of these words in Obama's campaign. Transforming, transcending, evolving, etc. of a transforming event looming in the first half of the 21st century. Just as a black hole in space dramatically alters the patterns of matter and energy accelerating toward its event horizon, that is, being sucked into the black hole, this impending singularity in our future is increasingly transforming every institution and aspect of human life from sexuality to spirituality. Oh, what then is the singularity? It is a future period during which the pace of technological change will be so rapid, its impact so deep, that human life will be irreversibly transformed. Well, now, the only way that's going to happen is not with what he's saying, but with the resurrection and the return of Christ. So you see how as well intended that this is really utopian human civilization without God, or under the auspices of Satan the devil, if you will. He says, although neither utopian nor dystopian, this epic will transform the concepts that we rely on to give meaning to our lives, from our business models to the cycle of human life, including death itself. Understanding singularity will alter our perspective on the significance of our past and the ramifications for our future. Parallel with the Bible, the beginning and the ending, right? To truly understand that it inherently changes one's view of life in general and one's own particular life. I regard someone who understands the singularity and who's reflected on its implications for his or her own life is a singularitarian. Very interesting word. The key idea underlying the impending singularity is that the pace of change of our human-created technology is accelerating and its powers are expanding at an exponential rate. Now, what does an exponential rate mean? What does that? We'll show that in just a minute here. And it means this. He gives an example of how a man had a lake that he lived on, and he didn't want a small patch of water lilies to spread to the whole small little lake. So he would go out there and rip them out, and he kept them under control. And then he went on vacation. When he came back after 28 days, the whole lake was covered with the lilies because it increases and doubles and doubles and doubles and doubles and doubles. Just like you take, exponential could be defined this way. You take a penny and double it every day, and at the end of a month you'll have well over $1 million. So that's what he's talking about here. He says, this book will argue, however, that within several decades, information-based technologies will encompass all human knowledge and proficiency, ultimately including the patterns of the pattern recognition powers, problem-solving skills, and emotional and moral intelligence of the human brain itself. To put it all in a machine. Although impressive in many respects, the brain suffers from severe limitations. God, you didn't make it right. We use its massive parallelism, 100 trillion interneural connections operating simultaneously. They, unfortunately, were so stupid they only run in massive parallelisms instead of trillions together multiplied, to quickly recognize subtle patterns. But our thinking is extremely slow. We're dinosaurs. This basic neural transmissions are several million times slower than contemporary electric circuits. This makes our physiological bandwidth for processing new information extremely limited to the exponential growth of the overall human knowledge base. In other words, he's talking about taking the human mind and with a machine and make it possible to have all human knowledge put into this computer, and then you can have access to it with your brain because you're hooked up to it. And of course, those computers will be very, very small. So then he says here, our version 1.0 biological bodies, the ones we have now, are likewise frail and subject to a myriad of failure modes, not to mention the cumbersome maintenance rituals they require. Well, he doesn't know anything about a spirit body at the resurrection, does he? If he did, he would stop all this foolishness and find out about God. While human intelligence is sometimes capable of soaring in its creative and expressiveness, much human thought is depraved, petty, and circumscribed. There becomes the problem. How are you going to get rid of the evil of human nature? We've got all these grand and glorious plans to expand us and make us better, and to encompass all human knowledge and technology and have our brains access to it, and that we can understand it, we can transform ourselves. But he has no answer for the depravity of human nature. So let's go to the Bible. Let's look at a few basic scriptures. I don't think we even have to turn to it. You know it. The human heart is desperately wicked, deceitful and desperately wicked above all things. Who can know it? He doesn't know it. He thinks he knows it, and he thinks he's wiser and smarter than most every man in the world, though he may humbly tell you that that's not so. Now, this is important for us to understand. What did Jeremiah say? He said, Lord, the way of man is not in himself to direct his paths. And really, without being able to get rid of the sinful nature of men, which we read back there in Genesis 6, was in every imagination of the thought of man. Now he's going to multiply it trillions of times? No wonder Jesus said that if Jesus didn't return, there would be no flesh saved alive. Because unless you can answer the question, how do you eliminate sin and human depravity, you cannot contemplate a future any different than the one we have now, regardless of the technology that may be there, regardless of the computer-assisted brain thinking that people can come up with. The singularity will allow us to transcend these limits of our biological bodies and brains. We will gain power over our fate. Ooh. Our mortality will be in our own hands. We will be able to live as long as we want, a subtle different statement from saying we will live forever. We will fully understand human thinking and will vastly extend and expand its reach. By the end of this century, the non-biological portion of our intelligence will be trillions of times more powerful than unaided human intelligence. Eat of this tree, because it will make you wise, and you'll understand good and evil. We're now in the early stages of this transition, the acceleration of paradigm shift, the rate at which we change fundamental technical approaches, as well as the exponential growth of the capacity of information technology, are both beginning to reach the knee of the curve, which is, it's linear, goes like this. Then exponential starts out nearly linear, and then it takes a curve and goes up like this into infinity, and the knee of the curve is right there. So he says that's where we are, which is the stage at which an exponential trend becomes noticeable. That's why we say information is doubling. It used to be every 100 years, then 25 years, then 10 years, then 5 years, then 2 years, then 1 year, then 9 months, then 6 months, then 5 months, then 4 months, and 2 months, and 3 months, and 2 months, you know, and down to a week, all because of faster computers. So this is what he's talking about. Shortly after this stage, the trend quickly becomes explosive. Before the middle of the century, the growth rates of our technology, which will be indistinguishable from ourselves because we will be part of it, will be so steep as to appear essentially vertical. We're going to accelerate and become absolutely great. From a strictly mathematical perspective, the growth rates will still be finite, but so extreme that the changes they bring about will appear to rupture the fabric of human history. That, at least, will be the perspective of unenhanced biological humanity. That is, if you're so stupid to not get on board and accept this. Singularity will represent the culmination of the merger of our biological thinking and existence of our technology, resulting in a world that is still human, but that transcends our biological roots, no longer human. There will be no distinction in post-singularity between human and machine or between physical and virtual reality. You can make yourself become someone else and then become yourself again. Sounds like a little angel manifestation, doesn't it? So what is he trying to do? He's trying to be God. If you wonder what will remain unequivocally human in such a world, it's simply this. Quality. Ours is the species that inherently seeks to expand its physical and mental reach beyond current limitations. And isn't that what Satan offered Adam and Eve? Yes. Many commentators on these changes focus on what they perceive as a loss of some vital aspect of our humanity that will result from this transition. This perspective stems, however, from a misunderstanding of what our technology will become. You gotta understand it. See, and without the Bible, you don't know what is right, you don't know what is wrong, you don't know what is good, you don't know what is evil. Now, continuing. All the machines we have met to date lack the essential subtlety of human biological qualities. We're gonna make the machines almost human. Although the singularity has many faces, its most important implication is this. Our technology will match, then vastly exceed, the refinement and subtle suppleness of what we regard as the best human traits. Doesn't say how you're going to take care of the evil. Today, we anticipate continuous technological process and the social repercussions that follow. But the future will be far more surprising than most people realize, because few observers have truly internalized the implications of the fact that the rate of change itself is accelerating. So he says to express it another way. We won't experience 100 years of technological advance in the 21st century. We will witness on the order of 20,000 years of progress, again, when measured by today's rate of progress, or about 1,000 times greater than what was achieved in the 20th century. Supermen, superbrains, nearly godlike. Now, another error that prognosters make is to consider the transformations that will result from a single trend in today's world as if nothing else will change. A good example is the concern that radical life extensions will result in overpopulation and exhaustion of the limited material resources to sustain human life. And he says, this ignores the comparably radical wealth creation from nanotechnology and strong artificial intelligence. We're going to solve all the problems. For example, nanotechnology-based manufacturing devices in the 2020s will be capable of creating almost any physical product from inexpensive raw materials and information. Put in dirt, out comes a car. Voila. Epic Five. That's what we're entering right now. The merger of human technology with human intelligence. Looking ahead several decades, singularity will begin with the fifth epic. We're almost there. And it will result from the merger of the vast knowledge embedded in our brains with a vastly greater capacity, speed, and knowledge-sharing ability of our technology. He even said in the interview with Glenn Beck that we will have our brain so hooked up to the computer that we can come home that day and back up every thought that we had. Now, what if you had thought of murder towards someone and that's backed up? Think on that. The fifth epic will enable our human-machine civilization to transcend the human brain's limitations of a mere 100 trillion extremely slow connection. Fast is always better. The singularity will allow us to overcome age-old human problems. We're going to solve the world's problems. Now he becomes Christ. That's his job. And vastly amplify human creativity. We will perceive and enhance the intelligence that evolution has bestowed on us while overcoming the profound limitations of biological creation. But the singularity will also amplify the ability to act on our destructive inclinations, so its full story has not yet been written. Yes, it has. Let's read it. Let's come to Matthew 24. We can read it right here. It has been written. The full end has been written. Because, as I mentioned, there is nothing that he has done to say we're going to eliminate evil by circumcising it out of the mind, which only God can do, by the way. But let's come here to Matthew 24 again, and here's what it's going to represent. Here's what's going to happen. This is what's going to bring all of this to a sudden and absolute end as a result of what they are planning and thinking and doing and want to do. And besides, when you think about all of this, who is to say who gets hooked up to what computer and what information is in the computer that that person can have, which may not be as great as someone else can have, so you automatically create a tiered society of the super ultra elite and all of you dumb little human robots down here that we need for you to do manufacturing and run little machines for us. And we will set up here with a longer lifespan, and we won't give you the technology down here so you can live longer, because after all, you're expendable and we want you to die because we don't want you to use up the resources. All right, Matthew 24, verse 21. For then shall be great tribulation such as was not from the beginning of the world until this time, nor ever shall be again. And if those days had not been limited... Because, you see, Ray Kurzweil, God's going to cut it short. There would be no flesh saved because, in spite of all their good, high, lofty, idealistic expectations, they don't know how to get rid of sin and the destructiveness of human nature. But its full story has been written, the return of Jesus Christ. Epic 6, the universe wakes up. He discusses this in chapter 6. On the intelligent destiny of the cosmos. In the aftermath of the singularity, intelligence derived from its biological origin in human brains and its technological origin in human ingenuity will begin to saturate the matter and energy in its midst. It's going to permeate everything. It will achieve this by reorganizing matter and energy to provide an optimal level of computation based on limits we discussed in Chapter 3, to spread out through from its origin on the Earth. So we're going to fill the Earth with it. We currently understand the speed of light as a bounding factor on the transfer of information. Circumventing this limit has been regarded as highly speculative, but there are hints that this constraint may be superseded. If there are even subtle deviations, we will ultimately harness this superliminal ability. Whether our civilization infuses the rest of the universe with its creativity and intelligence quickly or slowly depends on its immutability. In any event, the dumb matter and the mechanisms of the universe will be transformed into exquisitely sublime forms of intelligence, which will constitute the sixth epoch of the evolution of patterns of information. This is the ultimate destiny of the singularity and the universe. Isn't that amazing? Going to fill the universe, make all of these things part of the human knowledge that men have created. And it's just like it says there in Genesis 11. Now nothing that they imagine to do will be restrained from them. And what this is a counterfeit of God's plan. Yes, we are going to transcend all of these things he discusses here at the resurrection, and only through the power of God and by his permission, and only through conversion and yielding to him now. Not because we are so great, not because we are so smart. You see, that's why God has chosen us, the weak of the world. Because look at the great, the strong, the intelligent of the world and what they intend to do with God's creation. Now let's continue on here. From my perspective, he says, the singularity has many faces. It represents the nearly vertical phase of the exponential growth that occurs when the rate is so extreme that technology appears to be expanding at infinite speed. Of course, from a mathematical perspective, there is no discontinuity, no rupture. The future growth rates will remain infinite, although extraordinarily large. But from our currently limited framework, this imminent event appears to be an acute, abrupt break in the continuity of progress. I emphasize the word currently because one of the salient implications of singularity will be a change in the nature of our ability to understand. We will be vastly smarter as we merge with our technology, hooked up to your computer. Can the pace of technological progress continue to speed up indefinitely? Isn't there a point at which humans are unable to think fast enough to keep up? For unenhanced humans, clearly so. Now we have the class of enhanced humans. And who are they going to be? Well, the ones we deem that we want to be enhanced. But what would 1,000 scientists, each 1,000 times more intelligent than human scientists today, and each operating 1,000 times faster than contemporary humans because the information processing in their primarily non-biological brains, computers, is faster, would it accomplish it? One chronological year would be like a millennium for them. What would they come up with? Well, for one thing, they would come up with technology to become even more intelligent because their intelligence is no longer of fixed capacity. They would change their own thought processes to enable them to think even faster. Voila! Biology has inherent limitations. For example, every living organism must be built from proteins that are folded from one-dimensional string of amino acids. Protein-based mechanisms are lacking in strength and speed. We will be able to re-engineer all the organs and systems in our biological bodies and brains to be vastly more capable. replace them all. How about that? By using nanotechnology-based designs, their capacities, that is, of machines, will be far greater than the biological brains without increased size or energy consumption. Machines will also benefit from using very fast three-dimensional molecular circuits. Today's electronic circuits are more than 1 million times faster than the electrochemical switching used in mammalian brains. Tomorrow's molecular circuits will be based on devices such as nanotubes, which are tiny cylinders of carbon atoms that measure about 10 atoms across and are 500 times smaller than today's silicone-based transistors. So it'll just be a little tiny thing. Since the signals have less distance to travel, they will be able to operate at terahertz. Now, have you ever heard of terahertz? That is, trillions of operations per second. Speeds compared to as differentiated as speeds compared to the few gigahertz, billions of operations per second, which are the speeds of current chips. The rate of our technological change will not be limited to human mental speeds. Machine intelligence will improve our abilities in a feedback cycle that unaided human intelligence will not be able to follow. Better get on board. You're going to be left behind. Along with the accelerating improvement cycle in non-biological intelligence, nanotechnology will enable the manipulation of physical realities at the molecular level. You'll be able to change who you are, what you are, and where you are. Just like that. Nanotechnology will enable us to design nanobots, that is, nanorobots. Robots designed at the molecular level, measured in microns, millionths of a meter, such as rhesusfibrocytes, that is, mechanical red blood cells. Oh, now we're going to replace life. Life is in the blood, is it not? Yes. Nanobots will have myriad roles within the human body, including reversing human aging. How about that? To the extent that this task will not already have been completed through biotechnology such as genetic engineering. They also have plans to go in and change your genes. Nanobots will interact with biological neurons to vastly extend human experience by creating virtual reality within the nervous system. Millions of nanobots in the capillaries of our brain will also vastly extend human intelligence. Come here and get filled in, right? Once non-biological intelligence gets a foothold in the human brain, this has already started with computerized neural implants, leading to what? The mark of the beast. And remember what I have said for years. The mark of the beast is not just to buy and sell. The mark of the beast is to control, and here it is, total control. The machine intelligence in our brains will grow exponentially, as it has been doing all along, at least doubling its power each year. Just think of that. If you live to be 100, you're going to double it so that you are so intelligent at the end of 100 years. Wow. In contrast, biological intelligence is effectively a fixed capacity. Thus, the non-biological portion of our intelligence will ultimately predominate. Nanobots will also enhance the environment by reversing pollution from earlier industrialization. Nanobots called froglets can manipulate image and sound waves, will bring the morphing qualities of virtual reality to the real world. Human ability to understand and respond appropriately to emotion, so-called emotional intelligence, is one of the forms of human intelligence that will be understood and mastered by future machine intelligence. How about the spontaneity of human beings?
You can't do that. You're hooked up to the machine.
Some of our emotional responses are tuned to optimize our intelligence in context with our limited and frail biological bodies. Future machine intelligence will have bodies, for example, the virtual nature of life. What is the nature of life after singularity? Most important, the intelligence that will emerge will continue to represent the human civilization, which is already a human machine civilization. In other words, future machines will be human even if they are not biological. They will be the next step in evolution, the next high-level parameter shift, the next level of indirection. Most of the intelligence of our civilization will ultimately be non-biological, not in the human brain. By the end of this century, there will be trillions of trillions of times more powerful they will be than human intelligence. We bow down to the machine. However, to address this often expressed concerns, this does not imply the end of biological intelligence. Oh, thank you. Even if it is thrown from its perch of evolutionary superiority, even the non-biological forms will be derived from biological design, copycatting God. Our civilization will remain human indeed. In many ways, it will be more exemplary of what we regard as human today, although our understanding of the term will move beyond its biological origins. Amazing, isn't it? Many observers have expressed alarm at the emergence of the forms of non-biological intelligence superior to human intelligence. The potential to argue, the potential to augment our human intelligence, though through intimate connections with other thinkings, subtracts, has not necessarily alleviated the concern, as some people have expressed the wish to remain unenhanced. Oh, poor little slob. While at the same time keeping their place at the top of the intellectual food chain. Now, what they plan to do is this. Use genetics, nanotechnology, and robotics. And they are going to replace almost everything within the human body. Isn't that something? Now, I know I've gone a long ways in this, so we need to look at a few scriptures. We'll come back at it tomorrow, and we will look at some other things that are important for us to realize. Now, let's come here to Psalm, the second chapter, and let's expand the second Psalm even more to give us more understanding, because all of what Kurzweil is talking about is taking man away from God. Taking man and try to create him into an ever-living being, and ignoring the plan of God on how we can become as God is through God's plan. That's why this book right here is greater than 20 million computers that Kurzweil can hook himself up to, because when the resurrection takes place, we're going to be superior to anything that he can think of, and we're not going to supplant God. Psalm 2. Why do the nations rage and the people plot in vain? This is vain plotting. The kings of the earth set themselves, and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his Christ. Let us break their bands asunder and cast away their cords from us. Let's go beyond our human bodies. Let's become so enhanced with computer knowledge that is so fast, trillions of trillions and trillions of times faster than the way we think. And that will make us greater, that will make us better, that will make us as God. This will create such a fantastic society that everything will be perfect, and this intelligence will seep through the entirety of the universe. Not so. Not so. What is the motivating spirit behind this? Let's come to Isaiah 14. No doubt, the motivating spirit is to live forever the way that Satan is trying to inspire it to be, and for man to throw away the word of God and to create his own salvation by cutting all ties with God, which only results in total disaster. Now let's come here to Isaiah 14 and let's read the spirit of this. Verse 12, how you are fallen from heavens, the heavens, O shining star, son of the morning. How you are cut down to the ground, you who weakened the nations. For you have said in your heart, philosophy here, we're going to take this information and expand it through the whole universe and make the whole universe intelligent because of our efforts and the machines that we devise. For you have said in your heart, I will ascend into the heavens. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Just like he told Adam and Eve, you shall become gods. And this is the supermodern technology that men want to enact and bring upon this world, which is if they do and how far they will go, because God said anything that they imagine they are able to do, unless God intervenes and cuts it short, it will destroy everything on this planet. So tomorrow we'll pick up and continue with the rest of the story with Kurzweil and his plans for a utopia and a super, super, super human race of those chosen few that will be allowed to be trained and then eventually hooked up to these supercomputers, which will probably be so small it will be almost inconspicuous.